listening to Beer Heads Podcast.
It's lights out and away we go!
Feliz quarta-feira, mais um episódio aqui no podcast Gearzed, o teu podcast sobre sim racing. Como sabes, mudámos o nome devido a termos um contrato agora com uma agência de podcasts, portanto, este é o nosso nome, mas continuamos a manter o mesmo host, que sou eu, Ving. Esta semana trago-vos a Sabra Porto, o estúdio do norte de Portugal, localizado na zona de Gaia, com a melhor vista para o Porto, hoje podemos dizer, não é? O estúdio Sabra Porto tem feito muito a nível de jogos, mas vamos falar só da parte do mundo da simulação, do mundo dos jogos de rally, e neles, claro, destacam-se alguns trabalhos para o WRC, trabalhos para o Flat Out, e claro, o jogo-mãe deles, que foi feito completamente todo em Portugal, falo do jogo Dakar 18, e claro, do último deles, o Desert Dakar Rally. Vamos explorar um pouco as novidades que vamos ter nos jogos, eles vão-nos dar assim umas indicações do que é que se vai passar, do que é que não se vai passar, e claro, vamos falar de tudo um pouco mais, mas antes de falarmos nesta entrevista, vamos falar do meu link afiliado e, claro, do meu Patreon. Começar a falar do link afiliado com o Racing Anywhere. Como vocês já sabem, o link encontra-se na descrição do podcast, portanto, carreguem sempre no link, ajudam aqui o canal. E mais uma vez vou falar da DSL Pro com Dual Clutch. Está à volta de 800 euros no site, already incluindo taxas e, claro, também com desconto. Está a SDU2 da Simutech, é um display de data que trabalha com vários jogos, portanto, é um dos melhores displays de data e estará à volta de 350 euros no site, já com descontos. Por isso, por favor, aproveitem e mais uma vez cliquem no link, que me ajuda sempre que cliquem. E claro, vamos falar do Patreon. Vocês podem sempre juntar ao meu Patreon, como sabem, é sempre dividido com a Games Beat Cancer aqui no Reino Unido. Eles fazem vários jogos de Twitch online, têm várias campanhas, ajudam vários miúdos que estão a passar por cancro com consolas, com várias e diferentes coisas. Portanto, há muito que eles ajudam e eu estou muito contente de estar associado com eles. E claro, vocês sabem que através do Patreon poderão ter acesso a alguns links que já existem, mas hoje, irei pôr 10 novos carros de rally e 2 circuitos que eu acho que são dos melhores que tenho provado. Por isso, aproveitem, adicionem-se ao meu Patreon e aproveitem o que nós temos a oferecer. E vamos saltar diretamente para a entrevista com a Sabra Porto, como já disse, o estúdio de Portugal, que nos vai falar um pouco sobre o que se passou com o desde o início do estúdio até agora, todas as dificuldades que têm passado, a evolução que o estúdio está a ter, o que irá acontecer agora de novo neste mapa de 2023 com o jogo de Desert Dakar Rally. Portanto, há muita coisa a acontecer, carros exclusivos a vir, o que é que vai mais acontecer a nível dos mapas, o que é que nós podemos esperar também a nível de corridas de multijogador. Portanto, há muita coisa para falar e, sem mais espera, vamos saltar diretamente para esta entrevista.
Okay, hello, thank you. That's my pleasure to be with you, to speaking about these, racing things and especially about Dakar.
Let me tell you and introduce you Sabra Porto to the people that don't know what is Sabra Porto.
Well, Sabra Porto, so understand and to get a precise location about this. So we are located here in the north of Portugal. So in front actually of the river, of the Douro River, in the south part, looking to Porto. So it's more about in Vila Nova de Gaia, but this is in the same location as the metropolitan area of Porto. We started this like 12 or 13 years ago, so it was pretty much 13 years ago we started, and when we started was to set up a game development studio. We started a very, very small one. We were pretty much a family studio, Really, because it started, it was founded with myself and my wife. So I have actually investments from other projects before. So I was also CEO of Info Capital, and that was a distributor of Take-Two, Rockstar, Warner Brothers, and you know Blizzard, another exclusively for Portugal market. Before that, I was also the founder of Game Invest. That was you know for a few years, the biggest investment from game development in Portugal. I was also the founder of the first association from game development. So it was a lot of things for more than 20 years in the game industry. I've been developing a lot of games, but this specific one about what becomes to be the Saber Porto in the beginning was called as Big Moon. It was Big Moon Studios. Mm-hmm. We start, like I said, pretty much despite we have been incorporated in 2008. But it was started pretty much in the end of 2009 because there was a lot of things to start up. And we started working, you know, as a small, very small company. You know, first was like five people. And we started pretty much working for others, like, you know, working to providing some pieces of art, some port some games, working with some co-productions. That's how we've been starting, and then we've been growing up, keeping our business stable in terms of development, and also in terms of the business itself, because we were self-funding, and as long as we grow up, and until 2019 actually, when we were between 18 and 19, when actually we released Dakar 18, that's one of the things, we were already around 40 people. So almost 40 people. So, and then that was released Dakar 18 in September 25 of 2018. After that Dakar, many things changed because while we were growing up step by step, after that the things were Dakar put us ourselves in front of the old world and allows us to have several proposals to grow up even more with more external international investment. What it comes to end us to receive major three proposals for very three different groups. One of them was Saber. Actually, we were working with them on one project that was Call of Cthulhu. And then we received another proposal that was Crysis Remastered, which we had to develop here as well. But during this period of time, that was already in the mid 2019, we just agreed together to join Saber. And with that, we became, from marketing wise, we became Saber Porto. It was how it was settled in October 2019. And in February 2020, everything together, so it's Saber and Saber Porto, and then all the other studios from Saber, become part of Embracer Group as well. And then we proceed. Currently, so just to understand, when we join it, like less than 4 years ago, so 3 years, 3 years and a half, when we joined it pretty much Saber, we were, like I said, less than 40 people, so 30 something. Right now, we are more than 150 people here. So it was a studio that we grew
the same location?
Same location. Yeah, but for example, we're still in the same location. We still keep the original building. It's a very old building that we just refurnish and rebuild it. But that building was only capable to get around 40 seats. So we expanded to a campus. So we build up more buildings around. Right now we have three buildings. So it's part of a campus. We have everything here from motion capture to auditoriums to restaurants to everything here. That is, is a kind of a place where when you come to work with us, you don't need anything else. You don't need to, you have a breakfast, we have a lunch, we have things that your food at any moment drinks, and you have you have everything related inside of this. So if you want to animate something, we have rooms for animation, we have rooms for art, we have rooms for environment. So everything is done in-house. And that's how we grew up. And then, by the way, so this was pretty much an increase. Of course, by joining Sabre and Embracer Group allows us to do this jump for, it was around 375% of increase, actually. That was a calculation that we did, in the beginning of this year when we closed the last fiscal year. And more things, for example, we also have these 150 people. Actually, they are from more than 15 countries, different countries. So actually, we believe that we have studied one of the most, multicultural studios. We have people from not only from Portugal, actually from Portugal, we only have 55%. All of them, all the others are coming from, from Brazil, from Spain, from Russia, from Ukraine, from New Zealand, from France, England, America. So, you name it. So it's a lot of countries here. And that's exactly how we have been and build up a kind of a multiple culture and a kind of a success as well, because we bring all this knowledge from many other countries. And actually, we are not doing remote. We build up here what we call a local culture. What means a local culture? It means that people are relocating here to Portugal. And what we have, a nice weather, nice people, nice food. You know, the cost of life is way more efficient than multiple other.
Yes, well, yeah, only you can suffer that. Exactly. Just the food is enough for for make me sad.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's exactly, we use the benefit of being part of this unique country, where you have, you can have great food, great wine, great houses, great locations, all of that on a very acceptable and accessible price, and comparing for many other that they are very prohibit. Like could be London, Paris, San Francisco, so many other places that you cannot compare. But however, in terms of quality, the weather, the climate, the everything else, it's wonderful, and people are loving to move to here, and that is part of the success. But on top of that, it's necessary to make sure that we have great projects, and that was exactly what was missing from us. We actually have been working on that level as well from ourselves. That's what we came to sign exclusively for Dakar brand. That was signed way before Sabre. It was as Big Moon, but we have now way more access to multiple IPs from multiple things. So we have great opportunities to create the top video games, and we don't need to get out of Portugal. Actually, we are inverting the things so the people come to Portugal and enjoy the weather, enjoy all of the things. Another thing that I didn't mention, but one other thing that was important to say is when we started 2010, 9, 10, 11, 12, we were, like I said, working on work for hire. So we were pretty much a small team that was subcontracted by other teams to create a part of another co-production. For example, I still remember our first racing game that was WRC3.
That's we worked. My questions.
Okay. So we were working for Milestone, and our work were basically creating some vehicles and following their own technical instructions, and also working to help them with some tracks. Back then it was successful. Everyone was enjoying working together as a small, it was a very small participation, but it was very nice. People love it, both. And then immediately they bring another project together that was MotoGP. So back then was MotoGP 13. And actually we created for them the motorcycles. So they were more focused about creating the game itself, the gameplay. And we were creating, following their instructions about, the cockpits of the motorcycles, etc. And we were providing, and they were evaluating, and our team was growing up. Then I still remember they released WRC 4 using the same vehicles that we provided to them. And then the licensing moved it from Milestone from Italy to France. Back then was the Big Ben. Big Ben now is NACOM, I believe, the name of the publisher, and the developer is Kiloton. And so as a Kiloton, they was looking for their first WRC, that was WRC5. And WRC5, they were looking for the same companies that was working or providing vehicles. And of course, they contacted us. I still remember, you know, the person that is the head of publishing from Big Ben calling me, because we knew pretty much all the market. He called me and says, "Hey, it's true that you were still developing vehicles for WRC?" I was saying, "Yes." "So can you create some more vehicles for us for WRC5. It's, of course, that's what we do, right? So, and then we changed the engine, so it was a different engine, a different approach. But it was very nice to gather all this knowledge. So we keep moving forward. Then after WRC5, they were also entering in another game that was, I remember it was Flat Out 4. Yes. And Flat Out 4, what is a fantasy game? It was, it's more about...
Yeah, I was to ask you, which was a Flat Out 4, yeah, or was the Flat Out, because I think it was a remake too. So when I was doing my search, I just found Flat Out and I was a little bit
Flat Out 1 and 2. Flat Out 1 and 2 was developed by Bugbear. Bugbear is actually... We know we are very close together right now because we are all in the same group. So Bugbear belongs to an operator that is THQ, that belongs to Embracer, and we belong to Saber, that belongs to Embracer as well. So Milestone actually belongs to Playon, that belongs to Embracer as well. So all of us crazy because, you know, we are becoming old in this industry. And the industry is becoming all together, especially on Embracer side. So we are being all joining together as friends right now because we all belong in the same ownership. Because at the end of the day, the investors are all investors that buy shares from Embracer. But anyway, so I was saying specifically is that Bugbear developed these two. Then it was someone else doing the Flat Out 3. And then Kiloton was invited to develop Flat Out 4. And because, you know, we were developing cars for them for WRC5, they contacted us and says, "Hey, can you also be interested to develop fantasy vehicles for this Demolition Derby game?" And of course, we said yes. And it was another experience. So we grew up also there because for WRCs and in racing, you know, the simulation racing in general, we have to fulfill the technical requirements from a licensing vehicles. So everything that we have been working so far was based on precisely the replica that is authorized by the licensors. That means if I'm replicating a Honda, or if I'm replicating, for example, a Hyundai or a Ford or whatever is the vehicle, I have to make sure that all the requirements are met and try to be as accurate as possible. In Flat Out, it's a fantasy game because Flat Out is about destruction, and we cannot be so much destruction using licensing vehicles, right? Because no licensor wants to have that. Actually, we have a kind of a unique thing on Dakar where all of them are licensed vehicles, and actually they are well damaged, but it's not a demolition derby. So at the end, we have to also start creating vehicles that actually doesn't exist. So it was not only about modeling and creating technically the way that could be driving and destructing, but also by designing the concepts as well, being approved the concepts, making sure that it feels like a very cool vehicle, and then making that is destructing. So all of these was very interesting because the limits of the destruction on WRC was way less deeper, and on the Demolition Derby game, we have to go further. So once again, that was, I believe, in 2014 and 15. Then after 2015, we started to do a change. Back then, it was in Big Moon. We made a change because we decided, okay, we already are around 30 people. And we have been working on several games, you know, between adventure games and racing games. So it was the momentum where we said, okay, we should now start preparing ourselves in the future to have our own IP or our own game or something that is that will create a kind of a soul or a kind of something that could be recognized for the future in terms of our studio. And for me, I thought like, okay, I think we should cross together the two topics, that is an adventure, but also racing, because technically we knew how to do racing, but also we love the adventure as well. And if you think a little bit, and also another thing that is very important is I never wanted to be a copycat. That means I don't want to copy someone else. So let's say if I want to do another WRC or another dirt game or another Formula One game, I will be doing some weak game. It will be a copycat. It will never be as good as original. So what's for? Why I will do something to be a crap version of the original game, right? So it's like you do a music and for some reason I do a slightly copycat of the music, but it's not exactly the same, just trying to sell something. So it doesn't make anything. And this was not what I intended or what we are looking for. What we were looking for is something that could be assign it as, oh, that was from these guys. Is this something unique? So, and joining together the racing and the adventure, for me as a Portuguese guy as well, that has a real fan of Dakar, Paris-Dakar, and so on, nothing better than the rally ride. And actually, there is no rally ride so far. So the only two games that are based on rally ride games is Dakar 18 and Dakar Desert Rally. Of course, we cannot say that is the only game based on Dakar, because before that, you know, we still remember I played also in PlayStation 2, that was exactly. The Paris-Dakar and Dakar 2. You know,
I think I was 14 years old when they came out, or something like that, probably even younger.
Exactly. So, but anyway, these games actually were pretty much like back in the days, was any no difference like other rally games. Just you have a scenario that looks like exactly. The dunes of North Africa, but that is
there was from point A to B, and it just follow the point. No, exactly, not coordinates. I think the only thing they have is just say right, left, and was basically like a rally game, no as a point.
Exactly. They try to, in terms of graphically, they try to show a little bit about what is a roadbook, but actually it's like just follow the orientation from the arrow and you get there. So there was no open world. So there was just a falling line. And if you get far away, you just make a reposition and that's it. So the idea was not that. So the idea was, let's do really a simulation about what is the rally ride. So being a rally ride, you need to make sure that you can navigate. So Dakar 18 was the first game that was based on navigation, where you get a roadbook, and the roadbook actually, for example, in Dakar 18, we received the roadbooks from the Dakar from 18. So that happens on cross country. We started in Peru, then it moves to Bolivia, and then from Bolivia goes down to Argentina. So all of this South America adventure, it's a huge participation. What we did was we made a reduction of the map, you know, to fit into a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox One. we make the reduction from 1 to 33. So pretty much like, you know, in real life, you could drive like 5 kilometers. In the game, you'll drive around 1 kilometer, something like that. So, but nevertheless, it was like a stage with 1 hour to drive as well. And back, they created the Dakar Rally that took 14 days with 14 stages. And what we did was, let's replicate these 14 stages to the game. So the original roadbooks was sent, actually I had access to the roadbooks because I was there, you know, capturing pictures and talking with teams and following everything together. So to make sure that we have the accurate information, the things that the really matters in place, I was there taking all the info. And as well, I was bringing with me the roadbooks. So, and the roadbooks, you know, that was created by ASO, the organization. And once we work with that, just of course, since we have a less reduction in terms of kilometers, we had to do an adjustment as well. So we remove a few notes, pretty much the boring notes, right? And all of them keep it there. So the sense of the waypoints, the number of waypoints, the sense of the notes and the replication about the landscapes, you know, the places and so on. From Peru to Bolivia to Argentina, that was the replication. And actually, each place has been working to make the feeling. So we replicated the vehicles, we replicated the pilots as well, and we replicated as well the roadbooks. So ideally was, okay, now I can do that my adventure by myself at home. So I don't need to have, you know, a full of cars or a full of bikes and etc. I can now test it and actually drive using the roadbook. What also another important that is completely different from all the other things is that this game has 5 different classes. So it's not a game based on cars or based on trucks or based on bikes. You know, if we play, for example, MotoGP, or we play motocross or MXGP or something like that, it's from bikes. You play dirt or WRC is from cars. But if you play that car, you can play on any of these categories. It's 5 categories, actually. And so the experience can be repeated and repeated with completely different experience, because driving a bike is completely different than a truck or so on. So this all of these things makes this game completely unique. So I will say we build up here at Big Moon during the years of... So we signed the agreement in 2016 with ASO, and we started production by the end of 17, and in 18 we released the game. And that was the first rally ride game ever made, based on these huge navigation and roadbooks. And that creates what we call a subgenre. So we have a genre of racing games, and then we have subgenres, right? From Formula One to rally, etc. And from that we also created what we call the rally ride. And it's very important to bring to the people. Of course, we knew and we know that the problem on that one is because it's a niche. So it's not, no, there is a lot of countries in Europe that knows very well. But for example, it's not so much aware about that in North America or in other places.
I think even on UK, I think UK is not very well known.
Like I said, so I think it's this is a very unique and exciting, in my opinion, of course,
you say, for example, on numbers of vehicles, you have more than 150 different types of vehicles you guys have on a game. It's a lot of different physics, a lot of different, and all them from what I till now I try, all of them feel different, and that is something good. Because sometimes, often, you pick up a rally game, and the cars, even if you go with a Rally 5, you go with a Volkswagen Golf, or you go with a Skoda, some of them, like the dirty, you can feel different, but a lot of them, they feel the same. It's just you have a different, more acceleration, more braking. but the rest there or on Dakar, yeah, more on desert Dakar, you have different physics. The size of the continue.
To explain, go deeper that because when we complete Dakar 18, just to explain the difference between Dakar 18 and Dakar Desert Rally. So Dakar 18, we were absolutely focused about what makes the difference from all the other genre or subgenre of the racing game. And for us was, I have to navigate. So we want the first topic was to create a very huge experience about navigating and getting lost and getting the sense of you're so tiny in this world. Remember, this is a game of driving without roads. What is, you can find some roads, of course, but you don't need it that. So, you know, any other kind of game you find, you have roads to follow, whatever it is. So even if it's a GTA or even if you drive on the Crew or other games that are Need for Speed.
Our mind starts to remember, we know where we need to go automatically.
This is not the case. The challenge here was, how can we make a game where if you go to the middle of desert, think about that, where I have to go. There is no road here. So how we can bring that to the player? So we have to first understand very well, very deep, what the spirit and the soul about what happens in the real Dakar Rally all over these years, and try to transfer this user experience to the player. And that is part of the issue, part of as well. So it brings, one thing is the uniqueness. So how this is a unique game that you cannot find this kind of experience anywhere. That was what we were looking for. From the other hand, is also about how we can think about to make it possible for people that never tried. So usually says, oh yeah, Dakar, and we see great pictures and so on. And people, oh yes, I could go there and drive. But majority of the people even didn't think that. Guess what? There is no roads. You are driving in the sand. You are driving on a vast landscape with nothing. So where are you having? Where are you moving to? So
and now we're talking something very funny because I'm telling you. My wife, she don't drive. She don't know how to drive. But sometimes she jump on a simulator. And one of the games that she likes to play is Dakar because it's open road. She can go everywhere. Yeah. So she
can go everywhere.
So,
yes.
So sometimes she exactly. Sometimes she don't do the races by races, but she go to the free map.
Yeah, yeah.
And she enjoy it there. And I try one time to make a challenge on YouTube that she will do. I will not look to the map. I will just follow their air directions. So she will need to read me the roadmap.
Yeah.
And she said to me, she was so confused because it's not only the fact that you need to drive, you need to know where you're going, is you need to check where are we going with your compass. You need to look for the areas where they say
absolutely.
On this monument. Yeah, it's such a different type of game and such a unique experience that people sometimes often forget. Is something that you need years and years for doing it. You can be the best driver, and we saw a lot of very good drivers go to Dakar, and they not able to win it. You know, or many times the
very good navigator. Otherwise, so for example, another important topic. So that was coming back to the thing was that was our main focus for Dakar 18. So Dakar 18, we build up in terms of knowledge about, okay, we want to create this huge open world because we have to have a huge open world. So we can drive hours and hours and, you know, you don't get, outside of our map. Another important topic here is that if you think about that, we created in Dakar 18, we created 18,000 square kilometers. But thinking about comparing just other games, for example, I'm not speaking about Formula One, where you are a closed track, or even WRC, we have small tracks. Let's think about, for example, open world games as well, like Forza Horizon is a good example, or for example, GTA 5. So Forza Horizon has around, you know, just roughly 72 square kilometers. And GTA 5 has around 100 square kilometers. Now, we are not speaking about 70 or 100 or even 1,000. We are speaking about 18,000 square kilometers. So it's a huge thing. And we had to manage ways to fit inside of 50 gigabyte disk space because, you know, as a game, if we go more than 50 gigabytes, then we had to have double disks on Blu-ray and et cetera. So, you know, and a physical distribution is more complex. So, and, you know, so we try to find ways not to tweet it. But if you think about it, it is not possible to bring all the world there without, you know, smart ways to do compressions mm-hmm. or even things like, for example, procedural ideas like, okay, I cannot store in a disk all the small rocks or all the vegetation. I have to find ways to, when the game is running, to set up the things on the fly. So that means the things we have to create our own solutions for that. And we beat the previous Guinness Book record that was on 2007, if you remember, from Fuel game that was released by Codemasters, mm-hmm. and it was a game developed by Azovo, you know, the French guys that released recently the Fly Simulator. They are very good, and they made this tremendous open world for Fuel. But the Fuel was with 14,400 square kilometers, 14, and we made it with 18, so bigger than Fuel. And IndyCar Desert Rally, when we repeat the formula, so that was one of the plan, we actually move from the chapter to what we call the South America to Middle East. And the map now is completely different. It's a map with only one country, but this huge map is Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia, we even don't touch all of Saudi Arabia. We touch a big part of Saudi Arabia because we couldn't fit all of that mm-hmm. things. And we managed to be more than 20,000 square kilometers. So bigger than Dakar 18. The idea was to have all the experience between, you know, driving near to the Red Sea, that is, you know, one of the very beautiful oceans that they have, the mountains of Neom. Then you can go to the interior where you have more sand, or go to south on Riyadh. You know, all of these variations with the all the monuments, all the landscapes, and all the biomes that we have been studying in place there. I was there in Saudi Arabia to collect this data as well, once again, after two times on Peru, now on Saudi Arabia. And we bring this new game, the second game of Dakar. Of course, now we could do it with more time. We made more time. So that's why we developed during 3 years, not two. During these 3 years, we accumulated also three events, not one. So the other one only have Dakar 18. Here, this one includes Dakar 2020, 2021, and 2022. So it's three rally events instead of one, and they keep the same five classes. So that's why all these extends so many vehicles, many different solutions, and more, because actually, despite all this content, and even with the treasure hunting, if you want just to drive to find your own stuff, and to explore, on top of that, we also very interesting is we are preparing we have been bringing several new vehicles. We have bringing also great I know that it's fantasy vehicles, but great vehicles that is from SnowRunner, because we are part of same group of Sabre. So we had access to that. So it was a very cool idea to bring the trucks. And actually, we also will bring to the people the cars, some cars from SnowRunner. We are bringing the classics. You know, we made a lot of Ultimate Rewards, so you can play with the old Porsche that was, or even the Arriva Tannen Peugeot 4. 405 or Peugeot 205. The Citroën. So we have a lot of classics. So we bring all the classics, you know, the iconic ones. We still have more DLCs with classics to come. We will have, you know, the
hybrids.
Exactly,
hybrids on your roadmap.
Yes, the hybrids actually was a very interesting thing because Azo was asking to us to push from a pack of vehicles that will be the hybrid vehicles. So that means that they are the future of vehicles. And that means that we'll bring vehicles, cars, and also trucks on the hybrid that was actually there on the last year. And whatever is the new generation of vehicles like the hybrid or the old generation of vehicles, the historical ones, you know, the classics ones, all of them have, or even if it's a little more fantasy like the SnowRunners, all of them has its own different classes and allows us to extend the experience. So we expect to complete all this experience of that car by bringing one thing that for me it will be very proud of, that is basically the roadbook editor. The roadbook editor will allow the people, that will be pretty much by the end of this DLCs and so on, that will be able the people to keep proceeding with content. That means imagine that you have all this vast area and now you will be able to, okay, I can create my own route. I will, the editor generates automatically the roadbook. You can share the roadbook with your friends. You can play with your own roadbooks, or you can play roadbooks made by the community, by your other friends. And you can even create championships where you can bring people together and you share the roadbook, you know, a few minutes before you start, as it happens in reality. Because honestly, if you play the game and if you play over and over these stages that we have, you start memorizing. So that is not the true spirit of that car. The true spirit of that car is you don't know exactly what is the roadbook there, what will happen. You don't know how you will survive in terms of with your car without crashing your car. So ultimately, your goal is to proceed until the end. If you play over and over, even knowing that we are providing for you guys, you know, three different rallies, ultimately you'll get aware about everything, right? So instead of stopping there, the replayability after the roadbook editor we expect to be endless, because people can be always creating more and more and more roadbooks and share together and keeping exploring the game over and over. You know, that is pretty much our
plan. Let me ask you, because you talk about the editor, and the editor will be only on Saudi Arabia or on the map that you guys are going to open about America? Because on your roadmap, the packages will be America. Okay.
Yes. So the tool is independent. So the idea is wherever is the map, you will be able to create your own roadbook. So there is two layers of software. The layer of the landscape is about content. So the game itself, by default, has this big map of 20,000 square kilometers of Saudi Arabia, right? So in Saudi Arabia, you can use the roadbook editor and create wherever you want inside of that map, your roadbook on your stages and so on. And when you get the US map, that is another map, that is, you know, to explore from all these areas between the Salt Lake, the Yellowstone, the Grand Canyon, and so on and so on. You around that areas, you will be able as well to create your own roadbooks. So of course, with the map itself that we will be provide available, we will bring a few more rally ride things. As an example, I believe it will be two rally rides and with several stages. But on top of that, once you get installed the editor, you'll be able to select whatever is the map and create your own roadbooks, and then share, and the people can be playing together with you or again. against you or competing with you. And I think that will be way valuable, even in the future.
It's a game changer.
Exactly.
Antonio is a game changer because you are playing, for example, on my point of view, a lot of times you go to competitions of, let's say, Dirty Rally, giving example. Dirty Rally have a lot of rally stages, but you know them already. A lot of people know them already. And a lot of them, they have such a... They replay them for so long that they know them automatically and they take advantage on that. Sometimes they are not better than you. They just have more time to know the map than you. So this one will bring more closer to everyone, because if you go to a championship and nobody knows what's going to be the map, everyone going to start on the same point. And that's going to be unique. I think it's a unique point of view for gaming and for competitions. I think it's unique.
Absolutely. Especially, for example, if you think about by doing a rally WRC game or a dirt game, you know, from a standard rally championship, what you're doing by playing and replaying over and over that stage is you're getting more ability to do that with a faster timing, right? But you are
shortcuts, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But that is not what is the really rally ride or the really Dakar spirit. The really Dakar spirit is not about, oh, I want to cut some edges or trying to do faster than this. Is how to survive while navigate. So like you were describing before, imagine, for example, you are a rider. That means you are a person that you are on your bike and you are doing Dakar. So basically, you have to drive fast. You have to make sure that you don't hit any rock, otherwise you will fall. You make sure that when you jump on dunes, to be careful because it could be a cut dune and then you can fall again. You need to make sure that you pass all the other obstacles, and you know, even there is some camel or camel grass or stuff like that. And on top of that, you need to focus yourself alone to read the roadbook. And while you're reading the roadbook, if you go to simulation, you can even choose to be moving your own manually the rotation of the roadbook. So all of these is a balancing, amazing balance between driving, full attention for the challenges, full attention for the roadbook, making sure that you control the rotation of scrolling the roadbook and while you're accelerating and controlling the bike. So all of these is way more deeper than everything else. And that's exactly what we intend to in our game. And actually, that was our purpose about this game. And adding on top of that, the possibility that you can start anything new every time by receiving a roadbook and experience that roadbook, wherever you like it or not, and then rating if you really enjoy it or not, is something that will be keeping fresh and fresh. It's all about exploring the world with Dakar. And that is pretty much about this sense about Dakar. So this is not about, oh, how fast I can go with my bike or with my car. Is how can I find my way to get to the arrival special. That is the goal.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, it's quite funny because the game, even if you miss the point, you need to go back. It's just not so linear. You know, if you miss it, you need to sometimes to stop driving, you need to read the book, check how many kilometers you already drive on the wrong direction. So if you go on the proper simulation, it's such a fun. Sometimes a race that you could do it in 20 minutes, go through a proper endurance, and it's really fun. But let me ask you about the classics. I'm a nostalgic guy. Mm-hmm. I love Dakar. So my father used to have a collection of diecasts. I don't want to say wrong, but I think 124. So quite small ones, but yeah, the classic Dakars, all them.
Mm-hmm.
What cars are you going to bring more? The classic ones?
Oh, yes. We have been, so in terms of the classics, if you remember inside of the game, so we started like this. Inside of the game, we created what we call the Ultimate Rewards. Ultimate Rewards was classic vehicles that we put it there. If you were, you know, one of the top three On each classes, you'll get to win about, you know, Citroëns, Peugeots, other kind of vehicles that we put it there. I think it was around 10 to 11 vehicles. I can't remember exactly the number. On top of that, mm-hmm. we also provided already some classics. That was the last one was the Porsche and the classic Porsche, you know, from the Rally Dakar, and also the Tatra, iconic. Yes, exactly, from X, and the iconic
with a Rotman classic livery.
If you remember, so that those are amazing vehicles because the classic Tatra was an amazing beast on Dakar, and Porsche as well. So both amazing vehicles. If you remember as well, in the beginning, we still had this additional pack that was coming with the Deluxe Edition. Deluxe Edition is the edition that covers all the DLCs, and if you pay that, you receive everything already included, wherever is there and wherever is about to come. And if you remember, we have this, again, two vehicles included. One was the Peugeot 405 from Ari Vatanen, also a classic winner about that. On top of that, we also had the DAF. You remember the DAF? The DAF is also a very iconic. The idea that was to replicate as well these iconic momentum. I think it's a momentum that will never be repeated anyway more. That was, if I'm not mistaken, in 86, where Ari Vatanen was driving, and was driving to win with this Peugeot very fast on the Sahara Desert. And then we see the DAF, this turbo twin, super powerful truck that passes this, so overpasses him. So it's amazing. It's something that is actually, you can't repeat that because even it's not possible nowadays. Not possible, not a truck passing a car, that is possible. But on that level of speed, because the trucks now have speed limits.
Limiters,
for safety reasons. Actually, that was a very iconic momentum from the motorsports, but also with this truck, but with another truck from the DAF, there was a disaster because of the so powerful that was the truck. But anyway, the momentum itself that was a place in time in history about exactly what's happening between the competition, how far we were on the competition. So the competition was so great back then. So it was our iconic momentums, and we replicated that as well. On top of that, we are now included some more classics. So one of the classics will be the classic Africa Twin Honda. You remember the Africa Twin? So it's something... Yeah. Okay. You know, from the original one, the first one, Africa Twin. So it's we want to memorize and to make it memorable. One of these so great bikes, from actually Africa Twin is the name of Africa because it's like you have a motorcycle that can drive through the African, and that was the original Paris Dakar. So that was one of the classics that we want to bring. Another one it's the Niva. So the Lada is a classic vehicle as well. So it's something very unique that was very, very unique from the old days. And it will be another great vehicle that will come. So it's pretty much, like I said, in terms of the classics. So we are bringing a little bit about each memorable moments, and if we put all together between those that you can acquire and those that are in the game to be won, to be as a reward, you'll get vehicles from, from the beginning of the 80s until, including the Citroën two horses, the Tushva. So it's we have that as well. So there is a lot of
it's hard, no? It's hard for you guys to have a massive list of classics cars. Yeah, it's difficult.
No, actually, because of... the, the class of vehicles is not only because they are so iconic and so different, but also the engines are completely different and the suspension are completely different. So when we set up each kind of vehicles, we have to work a lot in order to make sure that they have a completely different experience. So you don't expect to be the fastest with the
so linear, yeah, exactly.
And but for example, for sure, if you want to be faster, use the Peugeot 205 or the 405. And if you want just to have fun, maybe use the Citroën two horses. This is kind of.
I made a comparison with the other day with the Porsche, yeah, with the Ari Vatman Peugeot, and it's a beast. The Peugeot is a beast, of course. Different type of car. It's taller, automatic. Even with a different downforce, it's completely different.
Sometimes we listen about the community says, oh, but why these older vehicles sometimes could be faster than the younger ones? It is important to understand that we try to replicate what was back then. That means back then there was pretty much no limitations. You pick up a vehicle, you could set up on your garage. Exactly.
It's a Group B on that car.
Yeah. You remember, for example, there was some classic vehicles, like, for example, a vehicle, I still remember, one that was sponsored by Dior, and that was a Rolls-Royce. I don't know if you remember that. And the Rolls-Royce, so it's...
I put on my list for asking for cars. So, I have a list here of cars to ask. I said that even the Volvo 343, yeah, is one that I would like to see.
So pretty much whatever you can get, you can go through the desert with that. That was the original idea from Dakar. Then, of course, because of regulations and trying to bring from a homemade thing to something that to be regulated from the federation and under the rally ride rules, you have to establish in some rules in order to make the competition properly. That's why the federation exists, and make the competition fair enough, and as well to keep the minimum of secure, so to make sure that you control that one. So in any circumstances, it is important to understand that nowadays we have the vehicles pretty much more balanced, because there are the rules about suspension, rules about the engine power, and all these kind of things. And back then, in the past, there was no regulation. So it was pretty much different. They were way different to each other. Another important topic here, you mentioned in the beginning of our conversation that there's so many vehicles on the car and they feel so different. That's true. Also, not because we have five different classes, but for example, inside of the car vehicles, you still have the 4x4, the 2x4, and the all driving vehicles, and all of them were set up differently. So, for example, if you sometimes, I'm picking up this car that is so cute and so nice in terms of driving, but it's very complex to drive because there's rear traction, or if you don't feel so well by controlling a vehicle that is only two wheels traction control, because you have to control by drifting every time, then you have other options. Like, for example, go for a 2x2, or in this case, 4x4, or even a whole drive that was way more stable. They don't expect that those to be faster than the other ones, but for sure, they will be more, in terms of maneuvering and the ways to drive, more secure than the other ones. So again, all of these things is about... Exactly like that. So there is players that can have different fun and different experiences by using different vehicles.
Yeah, you're right, because all of them have a different way of approach. And I automatically, as a person that I know how to drive, I know how to adapt it. But I see that when, for example, like I said, my wife, she likes to play, and sometimes she go inside of the cars with different categories, and she try to go and climb on the dunes, and after she drive in automatic. So the car tend to not have the power to do the same thing as the previous car. So that's all of them have a different way. And that's funny. But I will say to you one thing is, if you ever want to put some classic cars, I will say to you to put a Panda 4x4. I don't know why. I think it's one iconic car. I think they even went one to the classic Dakar this year. I think so. It was one Panda 4x4.
Yeah, the classic. Yeah. Well, the most near experience that you can get with the classic vehicles that we have been already prepared. Then, I mean, including of course the next big DLC that is upcoming soon. And what I'm seeing soon is the upcoming Monsters. It will be for sure this year, but we don't have yet a specific date. We are working hard on that, but. Yeah. For that reason, the more near from this Panda, it will be the Lada. So the Lada Niva is the more similar in terms of size and especially in terms of chassis structure, that you can get in terms of experience. Of course, it's not the Panda or even you remember the Lada Niva, from the Russian vehicle that is very interesting and is very iconic as well to experiment.
Yeah, like I told you, my wife is from Estonia, so she Lada is on her childhood. Yes, exactly. She love it. No, but it's funny all these cars on this time, they could have the durability of survive stages as Paris Dakar. No, not now we're speaking about Saudi Arabia, but about Paris Dakar that was so hard. And you see like the Volvo 343 or a Panda or even the Lada, as you say, this car surviving this one was crazy. But let me ask you what's going to be the next step. What is for Sabre Porto after this Dakar? They will continue on Dakar or you will try to approach other different type of racing?
What we can speak so far is, of course, we want to keep moving forward with a lot of knowledge that we have from the two initial skills. One is about open worlds.
Okay.
So how we can replicate open worlds and to bring open worlds to life. Special open worlds that are authentic. That means it's based on real things, right? So it's not like, oh, let's see how it is on the fantasy world of Mars or Moon. No, I'm speaking about the real things from Earth. On top of that, we also have driving. Of course, we have been working on a lot of that. And one of the things that we are working right now is to on a driving game that will be another simulation thing, but it's on a huge map as well. In this case, is a lot to explore. That's what I can tell you, that we are working on a more. We keep tracking this immersion about driving huge areas with realistic vehicles and so on. So this is something that we have been working so far. We have been working also to make. In this case, we'll be on road, so it will not be off-road. But because we want to experiment now how we can have experiences with traffic vehicles, people living worlds, and more about the weather conditions and stuff like that. So it's a lot of cool stuff ongoing. And is based on this kind of things. Of course, we are also working on other projects, but now in the more pre-production level. But in terms of ongoing development, is like that. About Dakar, of course, Dakar is a part of. Especially speaking about me, is a big part of my passion, of course. And I
wish we share the same.
Yes, and I would love to return back. To Dakar. However, like it happens in the first one to the second one, if you remember, we released the first one in September 25, 2018. And we released the other one a few years later, that was on, last year on the October 22. So it took between 18 to 22, a few years to bring another one. And why is that? It's not only about because it takes time to make it work, of course, but also because we need to make sure that the sales and the community observe the game time enough to becoming, another required to get another game. So, for example, when we released the Dakar 18, we had to wait pretty much like 1 year and a half or something like that to turn over. So returning back all the investments that we made and becoming profitable, then the things becoming profitable. So we can then reinvest again into the game. This one is not only about, definitely we are performing way better than the first one, which is great. But nevertheless, we need to have some space. Otherwise, Dakar doesn't has so big community as, for example, Formula One, where you can have a Formula One for each year and you keep selling, right? Because it's a very, very solid and constant selling every year.
Yeah, but you keep selling, but after the game that you bring on the next year sometimes is undeveloped. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so or eventually is a game that
is the same.
For example, same pretty much with a different database,
livery,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, so yes. I agree with you. Not even on the part of profits, because as a consumer, I prefer that you give me a game and I can see that you listening to the community when the community say, look, is we have some problems on the force feedback on the wheels or the cars on fields. So you take it back, you guys develop it.
Yeah.
I know that take time.
Actually,
then you give us a game, for example, now changing the gender, EA Games, I think, deliver a game about Star Wars. I think that two or three weeks ago. I'm not playing the gender. I like Star Wars, but I don't play in the gender. But for what I was reading, the game was released and after 2 weeks already received 3 updates. So the game has released already. As a consumer, yeah. I get stressed with these type of things. The same thing happened as a Formula One. They give me a new game or a WRC. You have WRC 9, 10, and the generation. All them with 3 years, they don't have anything big that make us going back. So I think sometimes it's better. They stop, like you guys do, make the game good.
Yeah.
So when you release it, bring us something exactly exciting.
Yes, for example, we have been listening about the community and we have been making some updates and improvings and et cetera and more. For example, one of the things that we were working was even there is a lot of updates that we have been working to keep improving, and we did already, and some are about to come. Many of them was suggesting from the players we are reading, we are selecting. Of course, We don't expect to invest a lot of time on one specific suggestion unless it's a great suggestion. But for sure, when we receive a lot of people speaking about the same subject, that means the community do cares. So we take care about that, unless for any technical or budget-wise reasons, we can't. But on top of that, we have been able, for example, to we released the game with for example, steering wheels, and then the people who said, "Oh, we would like to have this this brand as well." We implemented. Then we would like to have the direct drive for something. You know, we have it as well. So we have been improving the game for all the community. And for example, think with me when we will release the editor of the roadbook, that will bring the game for a completely next level. That level will be, the community will be able to create their own roadbooks, and we cannot control that. That means that it can do crazy things, right? So by doing these crazy things,
let me ask you.
I'm sure that we will take a look. Sorry.
And the mods. Are you guys planning to open?
I will touch on that. So,
okay.
But just to understand, from the doors. So, regarding to the roadbook editor, that means it was never done before. Even in Dakar 18, we didn't. So, because that opens amazing, endless doors. You know, from creativity to problems as well. So. I don't know what kind of problems we will get it unless we deliver that tool to the community. But, you know, that is one of the key things. We want to deliver that community so the community can keep our game alive forever. And with that means that we will take we will be listening and attention about what kind of issues, what kind of support we will need. So we don't know exactly what kind of Pandora box we are opening. Hopefully it will be endless fun. But so that is about making sure the game gets more, you know, maturity. So it grows up and becoming a very unique piece of that. Despite, so we prefer to work on that instead of just running to the next one. So, because of course, from a financial perspective, we could say, oh, but you know, we get money when we release a new game, because it makes you know, the public attention, you makes the audience attention, and so on, and you know, all the journalists, et cetera, et cetera. But in the end, we want to make sure that we establish well done this game before we move to the next one. Then once we get this, and when we believe that the community is well, okay, and if we think we have, you know, everything okay, then we speak about the next things. But until there, our plans are or currently, and at the momentum, our plans are completely focused about what it matters. That is, we have a lot of things to share. We still have a lot of things to deliver to the community. And we are still have a lot of crazy ideas to share and to make sure that people will get fun. Now, moving to directly to your another topic that was about modding, right? So one of the things that we have doing this on a more careful move is because, as you know, we are using, and that's part of our licensing from the ASO, is that we should use always a kind of, you know, original and license vehicles and so on. So the move that we are doing right now, so the next move on that subject is provide another editor to the players to set up your own vehicle that exists. So, for example, let's say that you have this Toyota Hilux 404, you know, and that's the Toyota Hilux from 2020, for example. And you have this one. So that means with that tool, you'll be able to clean up and have a clean vehicle, means, you know, a completely white vehicle, no brand, no nothing, and then you can create your own brands. So you can create your own team by, oh, I want to create my own stuff. I want to have my own colors, my own flags, my own stuff, my name there, and my numbers, and etc. So you will do it as you want to be, right? So theoretically, you'll be able, even those that wants to be participating virtually, or even that participated in real Dakar, but for one reason or another, we couldn't replicate them, because we replicated a lot, but it's impossible to replicate everyone. Because remember, every Dakar, we have more than 800 vehicles there, so it's not possible for us. Usually, we take around 70 per race. So it's always people that we don't have time, we don't have resources to replicate. But now you can, with more or less skills, we can use a tool that could be able to replicate that. Or even if you want just to create your own team, that your team, you know, you have your logos, your colors, etc., but only for virtual Dakar, right? So and that is important, because considering that we now are also sharing this Dakar Rally, you know, editor, that means that you also be able to create your own stuff, share with the others, and imagine that you're playing against others, but you want to be with your own colors, with your own liveries, so
and open the door for esports.
Oh yeah, and with that, it will make an unique thing. Let's say that, for example, you will be streaming yourself and sharing. Mm-hmm. So, or if you are competing with others, people will see your unique vehicle, not a vehicle, like I said, because the vehicle needs to be one of these licensed vehicles. Because remember, these brands, you know, could be Toyota, could be Nissan, could be, you know, BRX, the Hunter, or even the Audi. these vehicles are for real and they were authentic. And the teams was checking and licensing everything. So we cannot change that. That's something that is our limits in terms of creativity. This is not a fantasy game. Otherwise, it will be a different game. But we can allow the players to dream about, how about if I rent that car and paint that car with the colors and the logos and names that I really want, and then play with it. And every time that I will be playing, people will see me if they play against me. Or even I can stream it on and record on YouTube or, you know, Twitch or whatever, and allow to the community to see my piece of art. So that is pretty much our plan.
No, but I agree. I think we have to remember that sim racing and this sim world is about we do something that we would not be able to do. You know, we would not have the money to jump and go do a Dakar or do a jumping on a Formula One car. You know, and so this is a way. And I think you doing open the livery edition, and you have the roadmap open for recreate. That's going to open for championship, like we say, and going to open for the esport teams if they want to jump and create a new gender on esports, because esport is coming and becoming strong. You see, I don't know if you are aware of ECLR competition with the F-Base on new game on GT3, and the prize, they finished the first spring edition. They're going to go to the majors now in June, and the first team they won in terms of prize was £45,000. That's a lot of money already involved on esports. So I think this is a way of Dakar jumping to esports. You know, you can create your own team. The race is going to be different. You never know which type of race you can do. That's something unique.
The goal at the moment is to make sure that we also participate on growing up the community of this motorsport. So it is, you know, this commitment, of course, we are a company that belongs to Sabre and belongs to Embracer. And ultimately, we are in the game business to make it profit, of course. But on top of that, we also have some relationships with ASU organization and the FIA and stuff like that, and those relationships, and also as a connection and part of social relationship with the motorsports. And one of the things that we are engaged as well with the Dakar project is to share to the world about what is the rally ride. Now, there is a lot of people that never heard about Dakar or never thought about rally ride, or even never understood what is a road book editor or something like that, or a road book at all, or the rules of a rally ride game before the Dakar 18 or Dakar Desert Rally games. So these games are also about to be training. Just to remember, you remember the pandemic years, and during the pandemic years, that was 2020, 2021, we were developing Dakar Desert Rally. And there was not possible for the championships of rally ride to take place. So because pilots was at home, and I still remember many of them, they were installing Dakar 18, and some of them streaming as well. And it was very nice to see the people that, to make sure that they don't get so much time without getting this connection with the road book and the driving following routes and so on. They use Dakar, majority of the teams using Dakar 18 back in the days, to train them, to keep the mind training about how we can be surviving and faster on Dakar using the game, because they could not do that in the desert. That was true. That was a lot of teams. That was a massive progression on that. On Dakar Desert Rally, the idea is not only bringing that. That's why we also added this sport mode where you have a beacon, where you see the beacon. Yeah. Of course, that is not the real Dakar. There is no flash, ray that shows you the path. But that was to make sure that we could bring an accessible, so it's a support for those that wants to drive in the desert but doesn't understand so well about the But we also introduced a very interesting, let's say, tutorial when you want to start the professional. So if you remember, we have the three game modes. The first is the sport mode. Sport is pretty much like you just, you don't care about so much about driving, navigation.
Just go forward. Just follow.
Exactly. Then you have the professional. The professional is you have a smaller stages where not like in the simulation, where you have more forgiving and more easy access by navigation. Still, you have to navigate, but it's more accessible. So you can, you know, be easily achieve that. And then we have the simulation. And where the simulation, that means you have the, you know, speed control as in the real life. You have to control yourself regarding to your navigation as it happens in the real life. And so all these things comes together on the simulation, of course, but not necessarily that everyone likes the simulation. You can be somewhere in the middle with a professional as well, or even if you just want to drive and don't think so much, you go to sport. So the idea is to how we could introduce someone that never thought about how to be a rally ride driving experience. Maybe the first thing is like, just try to drive in the dunes, adapt to your car, try to control your car and your vehicle. Once we get that, then you already have the game, so you can move to the next level. And the next level could be, now, what about if you try to navigate as well? Or even you have to another person that can help you by navigating with you. And then you can even proceed with the sim. So all of these things are to make sure that we bring people, you know, people that just randomly would like to experiment about what is going fast off-road. And ultimately, we are training them. We are showing that there is this motorsport category that people are not aware because it's not so common from many parts of the world. So at some point, we are also promoting this kind of genre of the motorsport. And I think I'm very proud about that because we are advertising the people to don't forget about this so great category in the motorsport of the FIA. And you know, the next generations. Remember, you and me and many of the from the other people, for example, you speak about your father, or I can speak about my father as well. So we were fans about Paris-Dakar or Dakar because, A, we were from Europe. So especially there were a lot of advertising about that. But it was also because it was broadcasting on TV. And during the 80s, TV was a massive media with everyone was listening about that. So my generation was about the TV generation, my father's generation as well. So that doesn't happen right now. So at the moment, are on the video, on the video games and social media generation, right? So the motorsports cannot anymore be trying. No, it's nice and it's of course welcome to television media to broadcast or even other kinds of media. Of course, they're more than welcome. But we need to understand that the young generation, you know, the younger people, are not seated in front of TV anymore. They will be pretty much more open to interact on video games. So that's where
you talk about something important. As we come from the same country and you share the same news and everything, you knew it after we arrived to the final of December, before starting the new year, you start already have the news about Dakar. It was already on our, telejournal, on our news at 8 o'clock. They will talk about Dakar, about which driver will. Exactly.
Every was year. Part of,
yeah, exactly. I knew when the end of the year, I knew that we would come in Dakar. I knew that January would be Dakar. And like you say, even if the new generation, even in Portugal, don't follow so much Dakar, it's still on the news almost if we're going to have Dakar. They always make a segment about Dakar. I'm not so aware if they're still going every day, but it was like a daily thing that we will know what's happening in Dakar, even if you didn't have any Portuguese around or if you have just a Portuguese driver, we'll still having that one. But to finish this interview, because it's been amazing, I want to ask you four fire questions that you're going to answer me without talking. Going to be quickly ones, nothing special, but of course, can be always tricky if you're ready for them.
Okay, please, shoot.
let's go. Favorite Dakar car, if you have to choose one. I know it's tricky.
No, it's not. I still love my 405 Peugeot from Arriva 10, and I really enjoy that.
Okay, with a Pioneer livery?
I drive a classic one, yeah.
Okay. I would ask because he had the Camel 2, so it's always two of them.
But it's more about the livery, but I'm speaking about the car and, the accents, the vehicles between 86, 87, and 89. I think the vehicle that I'm driving is from the 89, from Arriva Tannen, and I still love that car.
I would say for me, it would be the Buggy Schlesser, the blue one. From, I think, 2000, I would say that was after 2000. No, I think it was the winner on 2000, 2001, 2002. I don't remember now because, like I say, my memory forgot a little bit, but have to be the Buggy, the French Buggy. I don't know. I like it. I think it was such an iconic car.
It did.
Dakar, what do you prefer? South America, the Africa one, or the Saudi Arabia?
Well, I think they're completely different experiences. We cannot compare. I will not compare with the North Africa because North Africa, I wasn't there. So when I started my personal experience on the field on Dakar was I started in South America, in Peru, Bolivia, Argentina. And then the third chapter that was the first one on North Africa was only from television, but on the field by being there with Dakar was only in the South America and Saudi Arabia, two completely different experiences. I think I will say that. What I enjoyed more in the South America was the people was very cheering and very enthusiastic. From Peru to Argentina, they were very, very enthusiastic about the rallies. So that was a tremendous experience. And on top of that is because we were cross country, so completely different landscapes and biomes. That was very plus. Saudi Arabia itself is a completely different experience. And what I love most about Saudi Arabia is because it's a huge country where actually people think Saudi Arabia a lot only about dunes, and it's not. Actually, it's amazing how we can have completely different things, from snowing in the mountains of the north, from great beach sites and beautiful landscapes on the Red Sea, and fantastic dunes areas. For example, I still remember even in the game playing the empty quarter. And the empty quarter is, the southwest part. It's amazing. It's like you are the tiniest guy in the universe, and it's like playing the Dune movie, because that's amazing experience. And also,
bring us a Mad Max type of.
Yeah. It is, so you can have, from amazing oases to as well amazing dunes. So I think. As only one country, I believe that we have a way more desert rally experience in Saudi Arabia, because when it was on South America, we have a tremendous, gorgeous desert from the dunes of Peru. But most of the time was not on the desert itself. It was more about landscapes like camel grass and stuff like that. Especially when you enter into I remember the Argentinian, where you were more about dry rivers. Oasis and more than pretty much the dunes that we have on Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is the pure desert rally, in my opinion.
Will be much more hard to do Dakar on South America probably than he is on Saudi Arabia, no? Because more rocks.
Actually, you definitely have more, you know, because it's cross country, you get more variation when you go, you know, from the desert of Peruvian desert. You can go for the altitude on the Bolivia, and then you go down to the Argentina or even the Patagonia. So it's different things and a completely different biomes. Like I said, it's not so much about the desert rally; it's more about a cross country with beautiful landscapes where it's beautiful. You know, it's amazing. You know, this country is between Peru, Chile, Bolivia, Argentina. Unfortunately, we never ended to have Brazil, but you know, these countries are amazing in terms of the nature that they have. But you know, cannot compare. We have a great things and a great experience as well on Saudi Arabia. So it's something that for sure I cannot say what is the best. I will say that is completely different things. It's like, for example, if you want to, if you like more to go to the mountains of Jerez, or if you want to go to the beach of Algarve, you know, it's completely different experiences. You know, that's exactly. the correct answer.
Would you adventure yourself on a Dakar?
Sorry?
Would you adventure yourself doing a Dakar?
That's on my list. One day to do it. I never had the time. No, actually, in the past, I didn't thought about that because were a certain moment where Dakar was very, very expensive. Still is, but it was in the days, you know, for example, by driving a car or a truck was very, very expensive. And by just being an amateur, I never thought about that. I was more, I want to bring a game so I can play it every time, right? And exactly. That was my thoughts. But nowadays, especially with the category of the SSVs and also the classics, you know, the classics category, it's way more accessible. Remember about that. The classics category, for example, or even how it was in the past in North Africa, the goal is not so much about, I want to be driving fast. I want to be, the best, professional, because I'm not no professional. It's about
surviving.
Surviving that. So having a great time with your partner, you know, or whatever it is, you're being a navigator or the driver, but making sure that, you know, you are being living with them. Think about like 2 weeks where you will be driving every time and then sleeping, recovering to driving again and again and again every single day. And you drive for 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, depending on how the problems you can get it, what kind of mechanical problems you have to switch, or all kind of problems that, you know, replacing two or three times the tires, you know, this kind of things with the spare tires and so on. So all of these kind of things is about surviving things. So making great decisions and be responsible by these in the decisions that you decide to make along the way. And this is something unique. We have that, and also like I said, the SSV categories, where it's wherever is from the light, the prototype light vehicles, you know, that is with Can-Ams and Polaris and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There is more accessible in terms of the pricing and the renting, so it's there is a lot of now possibilities where you can, book some team that you can provide you all the access and all the things for that. I never thought to do that on the bikes. I love bikes, and I ride as well. So I love bikes, and I would love to do by the bike. But I'm not sure if I could do it, because you know I'm turned myself 50 years old this year. I'm not sure if the upcoming years I will have strong enough, because you know it is amazing. It's like being a heroic act by driving, for 2 weeks on the desert, by navigating and driving and alone, being completely alone in the wilderness. So it's something like amazing.
Unique.
I will, it will be my preferable class. However, I think it will be, you know, in the list of plan in the years to come is to do that for sure. But I'm sure that we'll be on a more comfortable way in the car or a SSV, you know, or a classic, for example.
Okay, and if it was a car, which car you would like to do it?
Well, course, it's not there. About what I would like; it's what I can do. Right? It's once again, I think there is a few vehicles that will be, like I said, if one possibility may be more accessible to be an SSV, you know, we're talking about Can-Am, we're talking about Polaris, that's also the Yama as well. So there is some good brands with very nice vehicles to have fun in the desert. I think most probably will be something like that. But if not, if it's a classic, well, finding a very nice classic, you know, there is tons of very amazing ones, you know, from the Porsche. Of course, the Porsche is one of the top of the list. But also, if we could get again the prototype from the Peugeot 205 or even the 405, these classic vehicles are amazing as well. It's something that I would definitely prefer. But or of course even trying to do with you know, there is always a car in my mind that is a beautiful Peugeot 3008
the long one.
Yeah, car exactly. And you know, that was a kind of a almost a perfect car. You remember that was the Peugeot won always the vehicles. Because this car was so perfect, you know. Of course, the pilots was also perfect pilots as well, but they were, you know, achieved the perfection between the machines and then the pilots. And for sure, you know, trying to do that with a Peugeot 3008 Dakar, Maxi Dakar, will be a kind of a dream thing. But I don't think that is possible, because I believe that there were only four available. And I don't think that they have any more of these kind of vehicles.
Exactly.
So, trying to get some replica from the Peugeot 405, I think it's maybe more possible than the other one. So the question is not so much about the desire or what is my wish, but could be more about
the ability, you know,
more possible to achieve.
Okay, that's perfect. For my part, I want to say thank you so much for everything. Thank you so much for the game. I know that Dakar 18 was the first installment, was a difficult game because it was the first time that everyone was doing something. Of course, could be always a lot of things that we could change. This Dakar, I think, is the biggest approach on terms of Dakar. I like it. Like I say, my wife, that she don't drive. She is a favorite game that she put all the time. So if she jump on a simulator or I give a remote, he's the first game that she go to select. And I think for me it's something unique. We have our country do a different type of game. I think all the love that you guys putting on the game is good. You've been open since the first day that I approached to come to the podcast. So from my part, thank you so much for everything. And I just hope see you guys doing more and see more Dakar or different type of content. I'm really, really keen to see more.
Thank you very much, Hugo. And not on behalf of myself and on behalf of Sabre Porto Sabre as a company, but especially you know, from on behalf of all the team that with me created Dakar 18 and Dakar Desert Rally, I want to thank you and thank you all the community, you know, everyone that you know help us to proceed this adventure by buying the game and trying it and encouraging others to play as well. Because one of the things when we try to do something unique, not looking back and see, this game is cool, so I want to do another game like this one, so just with the different content. We didn't try that approach. The approach was, let's do something unique, something different. And when you try to do something unique and different, you have to keep working on that in order to make it better and better. And every time we receive someone that says, oh, I love the game, you know, even if you need to, I would like you to improve this or that, but I really enjoy this, a lot of pleasure, a lot of hours of experience and unique experience. every time that we listen that, or every time that we read that on the social media and so on, is a very big motivation for us to keep the adventure, you know, to try to keep things uniqueness. Thank you very much.
Da minha parte, um muito obrigado à Sabra Porto e a todos os membros da equipa que estiveram sempre em contacto direto comigo. Isto já foi gravado, penso que em finais de abril, princípios de maio, que gravámos esta entrevista. A entrevista só está a ser posta agora porque eu estava a criar este mês de, não é, fazer o plano do mês de rally e achei que seria o mais indicado pô-los no mês de rally. Acho que seria muito bom termos, falarmos um pouco como falámos do início da história do rally, termos o Nicolas DGV, que é um criador de social media a nível de rally e se calhar um dos maiores criadores a nível mundial. E claro, agora temos um estúdio da Sabra Porto, que falou-nos um pouco sobre todo o trajeto deles. E para finalizar, para a semana iremos falar do que é que se espera para o rally, o que é que eu espero que poderá ajudar a evoluir o mundo do rally de simulação, o que é que eu acho que está errado, que está a acontecer neste presente e que será também futuro. Portanto, muitas coisas para acontecer e poderemos ter uma novidade para a semana. Por isso, guys, espero que tenham gostado deste episódio e vejo-vos. Espero que tenham gostado deste episódio e espero contar com vocês para a semana mais uma vez. Da minha parte, é um muito obrigado e até já.